Blog Talk Radio.
You're listening to WrestleChat Radio.
Well, good afternoon, everyone, and welcome once again to another edition of WrestleChat Radio. Marcus Kane coming to you live from the SBTV studios right here in New York. And for the next 2 hours, we will be discussing the world of professional wrestling at 347-215-8486. 347-215-8486. If you'd like to get in on our conversation, of course, as always, you can hit us up in the chat room and we'll take your questions, comments, and opinions there as well. Obviously, the big news will be our review of Payback last night, which was very interesting in some aspects, and we'll get into all of that, including our match-by-match analysis. But obviously, first, we're going to talk about the firing of CM Punk by Tony Khan. And this has really divided the wrestling community, with half of the people applauding and half of the people saying Tony Khan is an idiot and he's thrown away his golden goose and what have you. So let's get down to the facts here, folks, because I think a lot of what's happening is based on misconception. Let's go back to the very beginning. When CM Punk was first signed by AEW, I had said at the time, it's a risky move because he is a very divisive presence. But at the same time, it's a smart move ratings-wise because it's going to draw. It's going to boost their ratings, especially initially. And I felt that Tony Khan was probably justified in taking that chance. And initially, it did boost the ratings. But truthfully, after the initial couple of weeks of boosted ratings, it really didn't move the needle all that much. And with it came a very unfortunate incident in which after a pay-per-view, CM Punk at a media scrum, while sitting side by side with Tony Khan, used that media scrum in a very unprofessional manner to attack former friends of his in a personal manner regarding personal and not wrestling related stuff. He also alluded to the fact that Tony Khan's hiring of certain management, alluding of course to executive vice presidents, was horrendous and that most people in the company did not know what they were doing. All of this in front of the media, in front of his boss. Now you can say what you want about CM Punk, but if you think that's a professional thing to do, when the media is there to talk about a match you just had, a pay-per-view you just had, a very successful pay-per-view that you just had, and you turn it into, I have a problem with Colt Cabana, who's a liar, and I have a problem with this organization because Tony Khan has hired people who don't know what they're doing, and everybody's soft and weak, and no one knows what's going on, that's not a positive thing. That's not putting your best foot forward for the company. That's doing the exact opposite. That's making it all about you and not about the company. A professional in that scenario would have said, I'm not here to discuss my private life. I'm not here to discuss my issues with other talent. I'm here to discuss what you guys saw a few minutes ago from this company, and to tell you this is the tip of the iceberg. There's so much more great stuff coming. That's what you do if you're a professional. If you're CM Punk, you make it all about you because that's the only thing he knows how to do. Now, humiliating Tony Khan in front of the press did not get him fired. And I've heard a lot of people say, well, you know, it was the Young Bucks who went to CM Punk's dressing room and kicked in the door. Well, first off, let's get one thing straight. Those reports have been totally debunked. They did not kick in the door. Kicked on the door after CM Punk invited them to do that. CM Punk said, if you have a problem with anything I have said, you come knock on my dressing room door and we will discuss it. So the Young Bucks decided, I do have a problem with some of the things that you said, especially in front of the media, especially in front of Tony Khan, about us, so we're going to come and knock on your door. Did CM Punk open that door like a man and say, good, I've been waiting for you guys, we need to discuss this? Or did he totally bitch out and refuse to open it? The answer is he refused to open it. This is where the Young Bucks probably bear a lot of responsibility. They should have walked away. They should have walked away, found a camera, and said, here's CM Punk refusing to answer his dressing room door after calling us out, proving that he's a phony, a hypocrite, and a fake. Instead, they let their tempers get the best of them, and they forcibly entered that dressing room. However, every single account, including by people who are not even really involved in the actual in-ring wrestling day-to-day operations, say CM Punk threw the first punches. So they were suspended, including the Bucks, including Kenny Omega. They were all suspended. CM Punk took his ball and went home, and boo-hoo-hoo, I shouldn't have been suspended. Only they should have been. I did nothing wrong when I called them out. I did nothing wrong when I told them to come to the dressing room. I did nothing wrong when I humiliated Tony Khan in front of the press and made the press conference all about myself and nothing about AEW. But he was brought back. He was hired back. And he was given his own show. As a reward, they said, well, because you're very divisive, we're going to give you your own show. Collision. You get to pick who's on it. You get to say who's going to be on this show. You get full creative control over yourself, to which he instantaneously makes himself the champion. Then he decides it's in my best interest to tell everybody else how they should be wrestling. Now, let me explain the incident with Jack Perry and what started this. And I'm not sticking up for Jack Perry, because all reports that I've gotten about Jack Perry is that he is a dick, a pompous, arrogant dick. So I'm not sticking up for him. However, CM Punk is not his boss. CM Punk does not sign paychecks. So CM Punk says to Jack Perry, if you're going to do this spot, you're not using real glass. But he doesn't say it that way, does he? Here's what he says. You might be able to get away with that crap on Wednesday, but you're not going to get away with it on Saturday. You think that's good people skills? You think that's a good way to run your show? Let's just say CM Punk was in charge of that show, and he had the authority to do it, which I don't think he did. But let's just say he did. Then wouldn't you have been better off going to Jack Perry and saying, Jack, look, I'm not saying you can't handle this. You probably can. But accidents happen, and this is a new show, and I've sort of been put in charge of it. And if something happens to you, number one, we lose a good worker who we need. Number two, I'm going to be held responsible. So wouldn't it be better if we didn't use real glass, just at least for safety's sake? Because I don't want anything to happen to you. And subsequently, I don't want the show to get bitched out because we did something wrong. So let's all work together to try to make this safe. So how about we don't do that? Isn't that the way you do that? No. CM Punk comes over and says, you might be able to get away with that crap on Wednesday. What does that mean? That means nobody gives a damn what's happening on Wednesday, because Wednesday's show is garbage, because CM Punk's not on it. But Saturday is my show, and I'll tell you what you can do and what you cannot do. Okay, so then, in London, in England, Jack Perry has his match. There's a spot where he gets slammed on a limo. They slam on a limo, and he says, yeah, it was real glass, Cry Me a River. He says, I was just saying that to get heat. I'm a heel. How many times have you heard CM Punk say that same thing? Remember when CM Punk, after a show went off the air, went off on Hangman Adam Page? Remember that? Oh, I'm just a heel trying to get heat. Don't take it so seriously. Oh, I said everybody here is soft and weak and crybabies and whiners, but I was just trying to get heat. Don't take that so seriously. Why do you take what I say so seriously when I'm working here? That was CM Punk's battle cry forever. But when someone else tries to do it, CM Punk takes it seriously. He's the very guy he claims to not like. He can get away with it. So if he comes out and speaks what he feels is his truth and says, Adam Page is a lousy wrestler, he's never drawn flies, and blah, 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 and then Adam Page gets mad and says, wait a minute. Oh, what are you talking about? I'm just trying to get some heat for us. Calm down. Oh, you're such sissy. You can't take anything that I say. You get all worked up when I'm working. You're marks. However, when Jack Perry does it, all of a sudden CM Punk becomes the biggest mark in the room. Now, I want to tell everybody something. Videotape exists of what happened. They have security cameras all over that building. There was none in the locker room because obviously you don't put cameras in a locker room. But wrestler after wrestler after worker after just people who were in there have all said that it was CM Punk who approached Jack Perry, shoved him, and said to him, and I quote, don't you understand that I can beat your ass? To which Jack Perry got in his face. What's Jack Perry supposed to do? According to CM Punk fan, yes, sir, I'm so sorry, sir. I know you're the boss here and I'm just a lowling. Please forgive me and allow me to still be in your presence. No, Jack Perry didn't do that. Jack Perry said, who the fuck are you shoving? And it's on. And it had to be broken up. And during this, monitors were knocked over that actually struck Tony Khan and some employees. And then CM Punk went after Tony Khan. And from what I'm told, and I have good sources, they say, well, he made a lunge at Tony Khan. I'm hearing he did more than make a lunge at him. I'm hearing he threatened him with physical violence and actually got his hands on him for a moment. Why? Why? Now, some people are saying, well, you know, Jack Perry should listen to CM Punk. CM Punk's trying to educate him. Okay. Well, let's just, CM Punk is not the guy to educate anybody, because CM Punk's been doing it wrong since the day he got in this business. CM Punk is the very guy who would have been educated in the old school locker rooms, not doing the education. You understand? CM Punk's the guy that a guy like Harley Race or whoever would have taken aside and said, kid, you're cruising for an ass beating. Not the guy who actually educates someone. His behavior is the exact reason there was discipline in old school locker rooms. So he's hardly the one to dish it out. But let's say CM Punk was angry about that. CM Punk could have walked up to Jack Perry and said, look, my friend, I was trying to help you out. I was trying to give you some good advice. You obviously don't want my advice. So from this point forward, I'm not going to give it. Don't come to me for any advice. Don't come to me for any help. You walk your own path, and you live and die by it. That's all. Why do you have to put your hands on somebody because they didn't follow your advice? Do you sign his paycheck? The answer is no, you do not. You have zero right, zero. I don't know if any of you watched very carefully, but Samoa Joe was already bleeding when he got in the ring. What do you think Samoa Joe was bleeding from? Go back and watch it if you don't believe me. Samoa Joe was bleeding when he got in the ring. He was bleeding from breaking up that fight. Now, Tony Khan turned the security footage that did exist over to an independent group. Not wrestling fans, not wrestlers, an independent group of lawyers who took a look at everything that happened, and the recommendation was CM Punk started it, CM Punk instigated it, CM Punk was the aggressor, and CM Punk needs to go. That's not wrestling fans saying, we don't like him. That's lawyers saying, for the good of your company, and the legalities within it, you need to get rid of this guy. They didn't say get rid of Jack Perry. Now, if Jack Perry suspended, I'm all for that. It was mutual combat, but I don't know what you want Jack Perry to do. Are you going to do that? If some guy comes over to you and says, hey, you're a pussy and a punk and you didn't listen to me and I can kick your ass anytime I want to, are you going to bow down before him and say, okay, all right, I'm sorry? Or are you going to stand up like a man and say, hey, who the fuck do you think you are? Because if it's the first one, stop listening to this show. You see, you can't call someone out. And then when they say, okay, if that's what you want, here I am, accuse them of starting a fight. How about if you were sitting in a bar room with your wife and somebody says, hey, your wife's an ugly dog and you suck and you're not half the man I am and I can kick your ass anytime I want to. Are you supposed to say, okay, I know, I'm sorry, we'll leave? Or are you supposed to say, hey, idiot, get out of my face? And if that guy takes a swing at you, what are you going to do? CM Punk cannot question someone's manhood and challenge them to a fight. And then when they say, okay, you asked for it, you're getting it, say, oh, they attacked me. That's like poking a bear, and then when the bear attacks you, saying you have to euthanize the bear because it's violent. Well, these lawyers agreed with me. These lawyers took a look. It took a week. These lawyers did an independent investigation. They talked to the wrestlers. They talked to workers. They talked to backstage employees. They talked to everyone involved, and the decision was made that both should be suspended, but only one should be fired, and that one is CM Punk. Now, these people did not make that decision rashly. These lawyers probably don't even watch wrestling. They took a look at it from a legal standpoint and said, who is the victim? Who is the aggressor? Who needs to go to make this business safe? And their solution was, you need to terminate the contract of CM Punk. And Tony Khan did. To his credit, Tony Khan did. Now, Tony Khan give you a clue anyway, because he came out and said, never before in my life, whether I attended a wrestling show or whether I was producing one like I have been here for the last 4 years, have I ever feared for my safety, my well-being, or even my life. Well, when you say I fear for my safety, okay, that could have been, well, they could have accidentally hit me or knocked something over on me. When you say you fear for your life, there's your hint. You don't fear for your life because two other guys are fighting in a bar room. Fear for your life when that other person threatens to do something to you. Correct? So when Tony Khan told that crowd, I actually feared for my life, that meant that CM Punk threatened him. And from what I've heard, he did more than threaten him. From what I heard, he had his hand up. Now, whether this will ever come out, I do not know. But I know they're trying to word it as he made a lunge toward Tony Khan. And I do know people who claim to have seen the tape, and they must have, because they describe certain things, as saying, yeah, it was a lot more than lunging. They were being really, really kind and downplaying it. What are you supposed to do with a guy like that? What would you do? I've heard, well, he's a top merchandise seller, so what? LA Knight's the top merchandise seller right now in the WWE. Should we allow him to get away with slapping people backstage? Should we allow him to get away with attacking Vince McMahon? Should we allow him to get away with doing things that could literally cause unsafe work environment lawsuits just because he's selling T-shirts? The answer is no. That's a silly idea. Who cares how much merchandise he's selling? Push somebody the right way, they'll sell that much merchandise. But you can't have somebody that much of a loose cannon backstage causing problems. What do you think would have happened? Let's just do it for instance. What do you think would have happened if there was a worker there? And believe me, some of the workers that are backstage at these type of events and in these facilities, they're not 20 years old. They're 60, 65 years old, 70 years old. What happens if one of those workers were hit by those monitors? What happens if one of those workers inadvertently got in the way and was injured? That's a lawsuit. Millions of dollars of lawsuit. And you're worried about how many T-shirts you sell. Why don't you worry about the possibility that this company could go belly up? People sued. And we're worried about, well, the Young Bucks were disrespectful to Punk, but you don't care that Punk was disrespectful to the Young Bucks. And the Young Bucks happen to be executive vice president. Now, it does not matter if I think they're qualified to be executive vice presidents. I do not. But the fact of the matter is, they are. So if someone I hate, someone I detest, someone I think is absolutely 100% unqualified to be an assistant manager to a place that I'm working, becomes the assistant manager, I have two choices. Respect him as your assistant manager and your boss. I don't get to say, hey, assistant manager, you suck. You have no idea what you're doing. And by the way, you're a pussy. And if you disagree with anything I say, meet me in the parking lot, and I'll make sure you know. And then when that assistant manager walks out into that parking lot saying, well, he attempted to assault me, he came at me in an aggressive manner. That's called baiting someone. You don't bait someone and then accuse them of being hot-headed. You're the one who caused it. So CM Punk was terminated. He never should have been hired back. There's a very real part of me, and I have no proof of this, but there's a very real part of me that sometimes wonders if CM Punk just does this on purpose so he can collect on a check he doesn't have to work for. Because I guarantee you that Tony Khan is going to give him some kind of payoff. So if CM Punk said, I don't really feel like wrestling, but I'll come back for a month. I'll cause some backstage drama. I'll settle for half my contract salary out of court, and I won't do anything for my money. Well, that's what he did the first time. Took the money, and I'm injured. Just like he did in the WWE. Remember, I'm injured. When WWE doctors examined him and said, no, you're not. You're cleared to wrestle. What did he say? Oh, no, I'm suing you because my doctor says I'm not. And you're trying to make me work when I'm clearly hurt. And I am going to sue you. How come it's always CM Punk? How come he's always the common denominator? So everyone else is wrong. The WWE is wrong when they said he's impossible to work for. He's a slacker. He's poison in the locker room. And nobody likes him. Then he goes over to AEW, and all of a sudden, he's the same thing. But no, WWE is wrong. AEW is wrong. CM Punk is right. I think it's time to wake up, open up your eyes, and realize the world isn't wrong to suit CM Punk. Two biggest wrestling companies in the United States of America have universally said, you can't hire this guy. He's just poison. And you expect me to believe that CM Punk is right. And they're wrong. You expect me to believe that lawyers, whose job it is to review a tape and legally come to a conclusion of who's right and who's wrong, they're just against CM Punk because they don't like him. They don't even know who he is. Nor do they care. They care about their client and protecting their client from possible lawsuits. So they've looked at this tape, and they did not say Jack Perry needs to go. They said CM Punk needs to go. That's all you need to know. Here's what you do not get to do in this world. You do not get to disrespect your bosses, bully people in the locker room, insist everything goes your way or you're taking your ball and going home, humiliate and embarrass people on live television, and then claim it was just a joke. When they try to in any way, shape, or form say something back to you, you take it as a personal offense and then say, but I'm in the right. You're not in the right. What CM Punk can do now is CM Punk can go home and wrestle with his overinflated and undeserved ego. And realize you were never a big deal in this business. You're a big deal in this business because other people let you be a big deal. I mean, if tomorrow Ozzy Osbourne stumbled his way down the aisle, he'd probably sell more T-shirts than CM Punk. Does that make him a great wrestler, or does that make him just a popular person? It's not all about selling T-shirts. You're not a T-shirt company. You're a wrestling federation. And Punk was delivering nothing for them. The ratings on Collision were abysmal. They were beaten by reruns of the Andy Griffith Show. So if CM Punk is such a draw, how come a man who's been dead for I don't know how many years and whose show was on the air long before I was even thought of, let alone born, is drawing more ratings? Maybe you should have hired the Andy Griffith Show. I mean, it's preposterous. There's no defending this. The only people who are defending CM Punk are CM Punk marks who, oh, he was targeted and he's always right and everything he does is righteous and good. And no, because you're exactly like him. You expect to get paid for nothing. You expect to be able to tell your bosses what to do, not vice versa. You have no discipline, no self-control, so he's your hero. That's who you are, then CM Punk's your role model. You're absolutely correct. But you're not going to get far in this world, as CM Punk just found out. His other option is to go back to MMA and be used as a human punching bag. You'll notice he did not cause any trouble, any kind of rift, in a UFC locker room. You know why? Because he knew every guy there would beat his ass. So on top of being a loudmouth, an egomaniac, a control freak, he's also a coward. He didn't call out anybody there because he knew what would happen to him. Because some kid with two fights under his belt who probably couldn't beat a upstart UFC fighter tapped him out in moments. So what do you think one of the top stars would have done to him? They'd have sent him to the hospital. CM Punk only has a big mouth when he thinks he's around people he can bully and take. That's a classic sign of a bully. When a bully realizes you might be tougher than him, suddenly the bully wants you to be his friend. This is my friend. It's not your friend. It's somebody you fear could beat you up, so you'll make him your friend so that you have an ally. You don't have to worry about kicking your ass. I know those type of people. He's one of them. He got what he deserved, folks. Now, I'm not a big Tony Khan fan, but I'm going to give him credit where credit is due. He did two things here that was correct. First thing is he fired him after giving that review to an independent panel, which was a very good idea. Second thing is he did not take the coward's way out. He showed up Saturday night, walked out there and told the fans, I know you are pissed. I know you're going to boo me. I know you hate me. I get it. But I'm running a wrestling company. I had to do what I had to do. I didn't want to do it either. Maybe, just maybe, Tony Khan is learning that you don't befriend these type of people because they'll turn on you in a heartbeat. See, these type of guys, like CM Punk, they just, oh, yeah, Tony Khan, he's cool because he signs my big million-dollar paycheck. But I tell him what to do. He doesn't tell me what to do. If I say shit, he squats and asks what color. Well, CM Punk found out different. He tried to pull that shit with Vince McMahon. It didn't happen. He tried to pull that shit with Triple H. It didn't happen. And he never would have done this in a WWE locker room. Because much like the people who were calling for old school retribution, he'd have got some old school retribution. So I'm happy he's gone because I think that the WWE was right from the beginning. I think it proves they were right from the beginning. I think AEW took a chance. And I don't blame Tony Khan for hiring him the first time. He took a chance, but it was a chance that was worth taking. But he never should have hired him back the second time. said that from the very beginning. And what did I say on this show? I said within a few months, you're going to hear more bullshit from the locker room because that's who he is. And, oh, amazingly, what did you hear? Gee, I'm psychic, huh? Amazing. I should play lotto. I saw this coming miles away and said to you on this show, 3 months from now, minimum, maximum, you will get in another great big giant behind-the-scenes bullshit from CM Punk because that's who he is. And what happened? Oh, it happened again. Amazing how I called that. If you can't see it coming, Tony Khan, and I can, that doesn't speak that well of your leadership. What does speak well of your leadership is addressing that audience in Chicago. Anyway, Mike, what's your thoughts on the CM Punk firing?
It needed to happen and had to happen, and it's happened. You know, I mean, look, you talked about what would have happened if you had, you know, if you had, you know, 60-something-year-old guy in that situation. Well, they have two of those type of guys in the company right now, Ricky the Dragon Steamboat and Sting, right? And so what would have happened if they were in that situation, you know, and a monitor gets thrown at Sting or a monitor gets thrown at Ricky the Dragon Steamboat or, you know, stuff like that. What happens, you know? I mean, look, this guy, we know who this guy is, and there's no way. I mean, and you talk about old school retribution. Yeah, the WWE's not going to hire him, and he's not going to be back with AEW. But I guarantee you that if he thinks he's going to go over to Japan and work, that's not going to happen either, you know, because Japan is, particularly New Japan, is another place where there's old school retribution in the locker room. Right. So,
yeah.
So go figure, you know, and that's the thing. And this is a guy that especially he's not going to go back to WWE, considering the fact that not only doesn't Vince McMahon want him back or Triple H want him back, but the same company that owns WWE owns UFC now.
Right.
And that company.
Well, here's an interesting thing, Mike. Let's just say you owned a reasonably big store, but it was a mom-and-pop store. You just opened up a store, and you said, I'm pretty small compared to the big box stores, but I have a little of everything. I need to hire some employees. And somebody came through and said, I worked at Walmart. They fired me for insubordination. I worked at Target. They fired me for insubordination. You going to hire that guy? Oh, you're going to say, well, that's, come on now. Both Walmart and Target can't have fired you for the same reason, and you're innocent. Right? Come on, folks. These people who are defending CM Punk at this stage just crack me up. Now, Derek in the chat room saying, you know, he is good on the mic. Well, he used to be good on the mic, Derek, but here's the problem. And I always told the guys that I wrestled with this, too. When I started training some people, I said there's a difference between being good on the mic and being honest. Okay? Being good on the mic is you create an illusion of stuff that's based in reality, where you say things that really isn't personal. It's personal to the character, but it's not personal to the person. In other words, if I know a guy had stumbled into the locker room and said, man, I'm going to try to do my best this week, but I caught my wife sleeping with my landlord and my whole life is ruined, and, you know, I've been drinking a lot lately and just feel terrible, and I'm going to try to do this match this week, but, you know, and I get out on the microphone and say, so my opponent is such a loser that his landlord is banging his freaking wife, and what does he do? He doesn't go and fight his landlord. No, he takes to a bottle because he's such a coward he has to drink. That's not being good on the mic. That's just saying crapola and insulting someone personally. That's not what you do. That's not good on the mic. Good on the Mic is The Miz doing an impersonation of the character of L.A. Knight and saying anybody could do this. This is not hard to do. Because then what you're saying is he's a phony. He's fake. He's putting on all of this. And then L.A. Knight can come back and say, you can do an impersonation of me, but this is really me. I'm not doing an impersonation of me. You're the one doing the impersonation of me. It has nothing to do with personal life. And if you do want to drag something that is personal into it, the very first thing you do is you go to that person and say, would you be offended if we took it here? And if that person says, yeah, I don't want that brought up, then you don't do it. You just don't do it. You want to talk about somebody's family? If you think for 1 minute that Shinsuke Nakamura and was told to talk about Seth Rollins' family without first having Seth Rollins say, yeah, that's a good idea, I'm up for that, you're crazy. You're absolutely crazy. When Seth Rollins was talking about Matt Riddle's family, remember? And he said, oh, your kids don't even want to see you anymore. If you think that wasn't clear, you're crazy. CM Punk never clears anything. CM Punk just says what he wants to say on the microphone. So if I just wanted to insult somebody I didn't like, does that make me good on the mic? That doesn't make me good on the mic. What makes you good on the mic is when you're a guy like Bray Wyatt who can pick it up and talk for 8 minutes and really say almost nothing, but you're encapsulated by what he's saying. Or Mick Foley, who can pick up a microphone and talk like Cactus Jack and some crazy whatever and talk some bizarre stuff, and you're just encapsulated by it. Or John Cena, who used to be able to cut down people based partially on reality, but mostly on their wrestling character. But it's not being good on the mic to just grab the mic and insult someone. That's just being a bitch. Big difference. Tom, what's your thoughts on the CM Punk firing? Hello, Tom. I guess Tom is not with us. Todd, what's your thoughts on the CM Punk firing?
Well, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, we've been saying this about CM Punk being a cancer in the locker room in AEW when he first came in. And he's been doing this thing for years, causing trouble backstage and everything with Punk, starting with stuff like that. And like you said, Tony Khan last night did the right thing, came out in public, even before the show started. There's exclusive video with him out on video saying he publicly fired CM Punk.
Well, he didn't publicly fire him, but what he did do was he publicly addressed the situation. Which is to his credit. It's to his credit. Now, again, I'm not sticking up for the Young Bucks. As executive vice presidents, they should have knocked on CM Punk's door. I'm not going to fault them for going to that locker room. CM Punk told them to do it. When he didn't answer, they should have simply said, okay, pull out the video camera. Here we are in front of CM Punk's locker room. He told us to come knock on the door if we have a problem. We're the executive vice presidents of this company, and we're requesting that he open the door so we can talk about this problem, and he will not do it. Call him out on it. Instead, you took a different route, and it wasn't a good route to take. As far as Jack Perry is concerned, Jack Perry could have been as upset as he wanted to be, and rightfully so, if CM Punk came at him with that attitude of, you may be able to get away with that crap on Saturday, but not on, I mean on Wednesday, but not on Saturday from now on, then what Jack Perry should have done was to call up Tony Khan and say, what is it that you want me to do in this situation? He doesn't want me to use the glass. So do you want me to use the glass? Because if you do, you better tell him. If you don't want me to, Tony, then I won't. But tell him to chill. Just tell him to chill. That's all. Jack Perry didn't do that. But you cannot continue to say CM Punk is blameless when he purposely tries to egg you into a fight. Time and time again. It's like the guy that comes over to your house for the first time and says, "Oh, yeah, you got a pretty nice house here for the money you make. Oh, this is your wife? Well, I'm sure you did the best you could." What's that smell? Oh, man, no wonder you're so thin. Your wife's cooking is terrible. And then when you get mad and say, "Could you get the fuck out of my house?" say, "That guy's temper is terrible. He threw me out of his house. He invited me over and then threw me out of his house. How dare he? What a hothead." You see what I mean? So if CM Punk goes around throwing, "I could kick your ass, and if you don't like it, you come to my dressing room and talk to me," you think these guys are not going to come to your dressing room? You think these guys are afraid of you? You think these guys aren't going to say, "Well, if you're calling me out," which you basically are doing, so what's their choices? They don't go. And then CM Punk says, "Hey, I called those bitches out, and they were too sissy to even show up. But they ran to Tony Khan and said, 'Boo-hoo-hoo, CM Punk talked bad about me,' instead of like men coming to my dressing room like I asked them to do and knock on my door. They ran like bitches to Tony Khan. But then when they do come to your dressing room and knock on the door, you hide behind it." That's the kind of person CM Punk is. You know, I once said, you couldn't get AJ Styles to say anything bad about anybody if you tried. I heard him and Dixie Carter were not friends. And to this day, he has nothing bad to say about it if you ask. Ask him about CM Punk. When you have guys like that, willing to come out and say, "Yeah, that's no good." Same way with Kevin Owens. "Yeah, not a fan." Eventually you need to say, maybe this guy's a little out of control. Maybe this isn't the guy we want in our locker room. And time again. So, Mike, I think Tony Khan did the right thing. I know some fans were upset. Then they were in Chicago, but Chicago's going to fade. And I don't think fans universally are going to be all that upset. And I am much more likely now to give Tony Khan more credit for actually showing some leadership than I was before this happened.
Right. And think of it this way, okay? Back 10, 15 years ago, there was an angle being worked in the WWE where they walked out on Triple H. Triple H was the general manager or whatever, and they walked out of him on him and all this stuff. And the next Monday Night Raw, nobody was there. They were out in the parking lot, all that shit. And then Sheamus came out, John Cena came out, Triple H came out, and the fourth guy in that whole situation was CM Punk. And what did he say? In the angle, but what he said is we don't go behind and do all this stuff in the parking lot. We sell this stuff in between these ropes. Well, what happened to that? What happened to selling things inside the ropes? What happened to that?
And you know, Mike, it's not even that much. If CM Punk wanted to make a great impression, and he was given his own show, that's the time when you grow up. Like I said, I have no problem with CM Punk calmly going to Jack Perry and saying, "I heard you were considering using real glass." "Yeah, I am." "Okay, well, listen, I'm confident that you can do it, and I'm sure, you know, you have the ability to pull it off. But there's a problem. The problem is this is a new show, and I'm sort of in charge of it. And I'm really uncomfortable with it. Because if anything happens, you'll get some of the blame, but I'm going to get all of it. Because I let you do it. So I would appreciate it, and I would take it as a personal favor if you would consider not using real glass." Isn't that what you do when you're a leader and you want people to follow you and you want people to be happy with your leadership? You're not a dictator. You don't storm in and say, "Hey, you idiot. You ain't using no real glass here. You're doing what I say, you see, because I can kick your ass. That's not the way you handle business. And let me tell you something. And there are people on this panel who can certainly back this up. I used real glass 100 times. 100 times. Somewhere out there on the internet, there is a video of me being powerbombed by two people through a solid glass table. If it's a certain kind of glass, which is real glass, but it's still glass, your chances of getting cut aren't high. I went through the windshield of my car in a real accident, head first, and I was not cut by the glass. I was cut by the rearview mirror, metal from the rearview mirror, but I was not cut from the glass. Glass usually isn't a huge problem. I'll take the glass over the barbed wire any day, because if the barbed wire you slide instead of land flat, you're going to get cut. It's going to land in your hair, going to get caught on your clothing. There's a lot to say about the barbed wire. Some people wax it, but we never waxed it. We used non-galvanized, but we didn't wax it. And that was just so the galvanization didn't get in your bloodstream. If it did poke you or cut you, glass is not that dangerous. So for CM Punk to make such a huge deal over it was ridiculous. But if he did truly feel he didn't want it done, then you come to him with concern and calmly and explain it to him. Then if he said, well, listen, you can take your concern for me and concern for the show and shove it up your ass, dude. I'm going to do what I want here. Then I would have said CM Punk is right. And CM Punk should say, okay, well, if that's the way you feel about it, you're not having a match at all. We did that when I was booking. We had a guy who was a rookie. He had had one match. And I had him put up against a guy who had probably been in our federation for 2 years, 2.5 years, and was one of our top guys. And that guy was going to put a mask on, go out there and drop to this kid so that he'd get a little bit of momentum. So I approached the guy to tell him, hey, dude, you want to go tonight? You want to wrestle tonight? And you know what he said? I ain't dropping. It's exactly what he said. I'll wrestle. I ain't dropping. So I said, you're also not wrestling. You were about to get a decent victory. You're now going to sit here and watch everybody else wrestle. There are ways that you can put your point across without threatening to beat somebody's ass or say, I'm the boss, I'm the king here, I'm the dictator. You don't do that. You just don't. CM Punk let this collision thing go to his head. He thought, I have Tony Khan right around my finger. He gave me my own show and told me I can do whatever I want with it. I can fill it full of people I want. And I can say what I want. I'll be the boss here. That's what he thought. Well, he found out different. Tony Khan ultimately is the boss. And he fired you. And if you look back in the history of professional wrestling, nobody's been fired more than CM Punk. Ultimate Warrior was fired once. Bret Hart was fired once. CM Punk's now been fired 3 times. Disgraceful. If he thinks his career is going to go down as, oh, a stellar career, no, it's going to go down as an embarrassment. An embarrassment of his own choosing, by the way. Because it could have went down as a stellar career. If he went to AEW, said, I'm checking my ego at the door. My job here is to get you guys ready for the next level. My first job is to draw so that people come and see us. When people come and see us, they'll see how good you are. And then they'll get interested in you. They're going to come initially for me, but they're going to see how good you are. So my popularity is going to help drive your popularity ultimately. And then ultimately my job is to drop to some of you guys to show the new generation of AEW stars is overtaking the old generation of stars, and here's the new stars. That's what you do. That's what Terry Funk did. Did CM Punk do that? I want my own show where I'm the champion. Great. Fantastic. It's awful. It's an awful situation, Mike, but I think Tony Khan absolutely did the right thing in this particular instance.
Yeah, and that's saying, no, I'm not saying anything about Jack Perry and if he's a dick or not. Maybe he is, maybe he isn't. But this is a guy who comes from, his dad was an actor. He's a fairly decent actor, you know, he can be, he probably has that type of talent to be an actor. And you're right saying that, talking about glass and particularly glass in these windshields, because those windshields don't break, they shatter, you know, they crack,
right.
They crack, but they don't break. Right. So,
right.
And we've seen, look, remember when Brock Lesnar put J&J security through the windshield of that car?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
Those
type of things. I mean, you know, they got the plastic in between them. But what I'm trying to say is, like, if somebody said, I'm going to take a bottle and smash it over the guy's head in a wrestling match, I'm going to be like, nah, dude, you're going to get cut wide open. You're going to get a concussion. You're going to get stitches. That's ludicrous. But if you tell me I got a piece of glass here that's a half inch thick, when you land on that glass, it's all flat. And the glass itself usually doesn't break off into jagged pieces. It breaks off into flat, thick pieces. Now, when I got put through the glass table, I had little minor cuts on my arm and whatever, but little very minor ones. It's not like jagged, thin glass. You're more likely to get cut from those light bulbs, those long light tubes that they use. I've had plenty of people break them over me, and I got cut from them plenty of times. Little thin paper cuts, because it's very thin glass and it's sharp. But that other type of glass that they're going to use, especially windshield glass, it's not going to cut you. Just not. Like I said, I went through the windshield of my car after having a traffic accident. I wasn't cut by that glass. There was no windshield left. It breaks off into them flat, thicker pieces that really aren't that sharp. But again, if CM Punk didn't want him to use it, there was a way to go and say, I'd rather you didn't. That was okay, acceptable. The way he approached him is not acceptable. He approached him like, I'm the king and you're a peon, and you'll do what I say because I can kick your ass. No, you don't do that. Would you like to work for a guy like that? Out of your boss said, hey, I want you to unload this truck, and I want you to start from the back and come forward. And you say, wouldn't it be easier for me to start from the front? Yeah, I'll kick your ass. You do what I say. You quit that job. Well, you're not threatening me. Yet the same people who, if their boss asks them to do something that's just a little bit out of their actual job description, whine, oh, he asked me to do something that really isn't my job description, expect that Jack Perry is supposed to take that from CM Punk. You wouldn't take it from CM Punk. See, that's the thing. You're being disingenuous because all these people who are defending him would have done the same thing. Anyway. We've talked enough about it. I'm glad that CM Punk is gone. As far as I'm concerned, he was a hemorrhoid on the ass of professional wrestling. Hemorrhoid removed. I know there's some people that like him. I'm glad you liked him. What I saw was an overrated dude who thought he was way better than he was. And in AEW, what I saw is a 40-something-year-old dude who looked like a 50-something-year-old dude and wrestled like a 60-something-year-old dude because he was injured every other week. Not my type of wrestler, sorry. All right, let's get on to Payback, because Payback was interesting. Started out with the steel cage match. Becky Lynch versus Trish Stratus. I never in my wildest dreams thought Trish Stratus could pull a match off like that. I'm impressed with Becky Lynch, but I'm less impressed with Becky Lynch because I do think she can pull off a match like that. She's 30-something, and she's in the peak of her wrestling career. Trish Stratus is 47 years old and has not been in a professional wrestling match other than just this Becky Lynch feud, really, for quite a while. Man, how many matches she had since she came back? Six? Five? She was nothing short of incredible. This was the match of the night, in my opinion. I was amazed at how good they did. I said that Trish Stratus looked a little bit ring rusty before, looked a little bit slow, was making some unforced errors. Well, not last night, she didn't. And based on what I saw, if she could do that on a full-time basis, I would have no problem with the WWE hiring her as a full-timer who wrestled on every card. She was amazing. Now, I credit Becky Lynch with some of that, too. Obviously, it takes two to have a really, really, really good match, and this was a really, really, really good match. But Trish Stratus taking bumps like she's 30 at 47 was damn impressive. And it shut my mouth because I'm telling you right now, I predicted this was going to be a slow-paced, botch-filled match that would just put Becky over and bury Trish Stratus into the, you know, managerial role or maybe even gone. Wrong. Trish Stratus proved something to me last night. She still got it. Maybe never lost it. Maybe it was just ring rust. I don't know. But she was able to really, really step up last night, Mike, and this was, in my opinion, the match of the night. I was, the minute this was over, I said, well, good luck topping this.
Absolutely, and that's the thing. And think about this. Correct me if I'm wrong. Doesn't she also have a couple of children, Trish Stratus? I mean,
she may. I'm not sure.
You know, that's damn amazing for a 47-year-old. For a 47-year-old woman that probably has a couple of children by now, and to be in that type of shape, I mean, and to take those types of bumps, and not let alone what happened at the end of the match, which we haven't talked about yet, what she took from Zoe Stark, you know,
yeah.
I mean, again, like you said, if they want to give her one last little run to where, you know, maybe a 3-year, maybe get her until she's 50, right? You know,
mm-hmm.
2 or 3 years. I'm fine with 2 or 3 years from Trish Stratus. I'm fine with it. If she's going to give us stuff like that, I'm more than fine with it.
And even if, you know, the third year is just managing or whatever, if she doesn't want to do it, just occasional match, that's fine. Give her a contract like Edge has. Well, you wrestle occasionally. But, you know, we were all amazed and saying, you know, AJ Styles at 47 years old or 48 years old, it's still phenomenal, and no pun intended, and so good at what he does, which is the truth, but he's never stopped doing it. Trish Stratus literally stopped doing it. And that's usually when it's done. When you try to come back at that age, when you've stopped doing it for a few years, usually it doesn't happen. So this time it happened. What a great match, Todd. I thought this was really match of the night.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, that was a great match with Trish Stratus and Becky Lynch there last night. And like you said, in that match, it was like quite a full finishes. I like the one spot with a So Zoe Stark hit Becky Lynch in the face with the door. That was a pretty good spot right there.
I thought it was a great spot. No question about it. was filled with really good spots, actually. A very, very, very solid opening. We then get John Cena coming out. And John Cena announces he's going to referee LA Knight versus The Miz. Now, I wanted this match to be great. Really did. Because I'm a big Miz fan. No, I don't want him to be world champion. No, I don't want him to be, you know, the top guy. I want him to keep doing exactly what he's doing because he's so damn good at it. And when you need him to pull off a really good, solid match, he pulls off a really good, solid match. This match needed to be a really good, solid match and a way for LA Knight to secure himself as, wow, he's definitely a top guy. It did not succeed. There were a few botches. The match was more about John Cena and the Miz jawjacking. And to be honest with you, there were times when the crowd felt like they weren't so into this, and LA Knight needs to watch that. Now, later on, they got into it, and they started chanting LA Knight and stuff, but there was a time when fans were like, eh, LA Knight needs to brush up his arsenal a little bit, make sure he's very solid and very smooth with all of his moves, and make sure that the pacing of these matches are a little bit better. Because the pacing of this was weird. And at times it felt much more like a TV match than a pay-per-view match. TV matches pacing, by their very nature, has to be different. And I understand that. So if this was a TV match, I'd say, well, for a TV match that went a couple of commercial breaks, this was pretty good. But it wasn't a TV match. It's a pay-per-view match. There is no commercial break. And you absolutely need to keep your pacing. And I think there were times when he didn't, and I don't think it was the Miz's fault, I'm going to be honest with you. However, the crowd at the end absolutely acknowledged LA Knight as probably the most popular guy in the Federation right now. So, now, there was a really good line where the Miz said that John Cena is almost 50 years old and still dresses like a Teletubby. That was pretty funny. The end where John Cena says, shake my hand and respect and think, whatever, you know, I get what they were trying to do, but it came off corny. This was an okay match, and I think LA Knight got away with it, Mike, but I think he absolutely needs to pick up the pace on pay-per-view matches in the future because the audience felt uncomfortable during some of this.
Right. And to your point about him adding a move or coming up with something a little bit different, that kind of corkscrew DDT that he did.
Yeah.
That was something I've never seen that before. You know, that type of DDT. I've never seen that DDT before. If he can somehow work that into some more of his matches, it's going to help him out.
No question. Keep the pace up. There was some time when he, like, reached for him or he didn't have him in the right position and he had to double clutch. I'd like to see that eliminated. The time for double clutching and second guessing and saying, oh, wait a minute, let me adjust myself, is not a pay-per-view match. Okay, so there were at least two times when I saw him do that. He needs to stop doing that. It shows you aren't self-confident about the move. Let me make sure it's perfectly right. Well, we don't have time for this. You're in the middle of the match, not practice. So I would caution him not to do that anymore, but the fans love him. And I think he can build off this momentum. My problem is he beat Finn Balor more easy than he beat The Miz. So are we supposed to think that, well, The Miz is tougher than Finn Balor? So naturally, he'd be harder for LA Knight to be. I don't think that's what you're supposed to be thinking. So it was a little weird to me, but overall, it was okay, Todd.
You're absolutely right there. Like you said, that match last night with The Miz and LA Knight, and there were times the LA Knight and John Cena were about to get face-to-face with one another in the middle of the match.
Yeah, and that's sort of what it felt like it was about. And again, I think it should have been more about just solidifying LA Knight as a top guy, but we'll see what happens. Austin Theory, Rey Mysterio for the United States Championship. Once again, I like Austin Theory. I've said plenty of times on this show, I think Austin Theory is the future of the WWE. I really do. I think he has all the skills. I think he has to learn some stuff. He's still green, obviously. He's not perfect. But at the end of the day, he's very entertaining. I think he's only going to get better. And so I think, yeah, I think he could be the future of the WWE. But that's not right now. And this match also felt a little bit like a TV match to me. It felt like I'm watching just a regular episode. I wish it had more of a, I don't know. There's something missing. I just don't know what it is. But it just felt like, I don't know. At no time did I really feel like Theory is trying really hard to beat Rey Mysterio for a title. It felt like, let me get all my dance moves correct on Dancing with the Stars or Bust a Groove video game. Let me make sure all of my moves are exactly right. As opposed to, let me make it look like we're really fighting here. I didn't buy into this match. I thought this was the worst match of the night, actually. But Rey Mysterio wins. So now who's next for Rey Mysterio? Well, I don't know. That'll be very interesting, huh? It's also going to be interesting what they do with Austin Theory from here. The next feud they get him in, I would imagine, should be one he could win. So don't hook him up with LA Knight. I think there's maybe some idea that might happen. He's not going to win that. Now, let me tell you what I do think is going to happen, and I'm rooting for it to happen. I think the LWO is going to turn heel, but not with Rey. Carlito's been signed for a long time, and they're not doing anything with Carlito, despite the fact that he's been signed. I think Carlito may end up being the new leader of the LWO, and Rey gets kicked to the curb. I would rather see that than Carlito just join. Rey Mysterio is not a good leader for the LWO because it just doesn't feel genuine. Santos Escobar and crew are mostly always heels. They're better as heels. Carlito's better as a heel. And if you brought Carlito in as the new leader and gave Rey Mysterio some storyline to build upon, where he'd first have to go against Escobar and then ultimately Carlito, I'm into that. So I hope that happens. I don't know if it's going to happen, Mike, but it's a storyline that's worth pursuing.
It is a storyline worth pursuing. And really, what's her name is Zelina Vega is not really a heel. I mean, she can be. But right now, because of what she did in Puerto Rico and stuff like that, she's not really a heel. You know, she's more of a in-between leaning face person. So We got to do something to, if you're going to keep them together with a woman in the group, then you better think about bringing up Electra Lopez or somebody else that can replace Zelina Vega, because it's going to be hard turning heel. But what I did like in this match is that spot where Ray Jr. Usually does that sliding sort of under the bottom rope splash, he turned it into basically a tornado DDT, a sliding tornado DDT. That was
yes.
Cool. That was a cool spot there.
Definitely a cool spot. Overall, Todd, it felt more like a TV match, but it was okay.
Oh, yeah, sorry. You're absolutely right. Like you said, that match with Rey Mysterio and Austin Theory last night was an okay match there for that U.S. Championship, and it was just didn't have a pay-per-view feel to it. not.
No, it didn't. And Theory's got to be careful of that because Ray's not going anywhere. Ray's a legend. Theory's got to be careful of that because if he puts on a lot of these matches, they'll say, yeah, he's an undercard guy. And you don't want that because that would be wasted talent. We then get the Steel City street fight between Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn and Damian Priest and Finn Balor. And I'm happy to tell you that even though I still think Becky Lynch and Trish Stratus was the match of the night as far as technically, this was match of the night as far as entertaining. This was an awesome match to watch and precisely the type of wrestling I like. There's been a lot of people who wrote to me and said, well, you know, you criticize this type of wrestling or that type of wrestling. What type of wrestling do you like? Well, you've just seen it. You've just seen it. That's the type of wrestling I like. It looked like they were beating the hell out of each other. And at some point in time, I believe they were beating the hell out of each other. Because I'm watching some of these things land, and I'm like, I don't know. Like, it landed to me. I think they threw caution to the wind last night. I think they did an excellent, excellent job of excitement. The crowd was nuts for it. The crowd has been begging for this type of wrestling for a long time. I don't know if Kevin Owens was really busted open hard way. They say he was, but I don't know. That blood looked very much like a blade job, so I don't know. Either way, what a tremendous match. Now, we'd said on this show, the only way the Judgment Day is going to win is if they want J.D. McDonagh the Judgment Day, if they want J.D. McDonagh to join the Judgment Day to stretch out this story of animosity between Finn Balor and Damian Priest. I said I wouldn't go that way, and I still wouldn't have went that way. I would have had it end last night. Let Rhea go with Dominic on her own. Let Finn go with J.D. McDonagh for a tag team. Let Damian Priest pursue the Money in the Bank all individually. You got three separate storylines that way. It's better. They chose not to do that. They're going to go with the second choice, which is J.D. McDonagh obviously is going to join Judgment Day, and he's going to drive that rift farther between Finn Balor and Damian Priest, even though they're tag team champions. I don't expect them to be tag team champions for long. One of two things is going to happen. Either the Street Profits are going to get it, which is very likely. We have the Authors of Pain officially signed. They've been signed for a while. They're coming back with Paul Ellering like they originally were. If they come back as faces, but just those we're kicking your ass type faces, I would imagine they're going to be tag team champions quickly, especially since that tag team that, what were they called now? I don't even remember, that Jinder Mahal had brought in. They're gone. I mean, I don't even know where they went. They went from beating everybody's ass each week to they don't exist. Nobody was impressed with them. Nobody was, you know, the proper thing was you were supposed to be terrified of, oh, my God, they're so big and strong. They've got the Office of Pain now. They're going to be those people. So I don't think they'll hold it long necessarily, but having them have every one of them have some form of gold is a good idea. Bad idea was probably should have had Rhea Ripley's match before this because Rhea Ripley was the one who said, if you don't win the tag team championship, there's going to be changes. Well, I would have rather seen her defend her belt first so that then she could have reiterated that and it would have been more pressure. They won the belt, so it was like, oh, well, you know. Either way, my favorite match of the night, I don't think it was the best match of the night. I do think Becky Lynch and Trish Stratus was, but this was my favorite match of the night. This was the match that I literally said, this is what I want more often out of professional wrestling. Now, a good portion of that can be attributed to Kevin Owens. Kevin Owens wrestles that style very well. He wrestles that style much better than he wrestles the other style and probably should do it more often, even though it's kind of high risk. A lot of people were a little concerned about that move on the table there, but to be perfectly honest, he did it as well as he could. I know he barely touched him, but you got to be careful. You can't come down with your whole body weight on somebody like that, especially Kevin Owens. You got to hit him with just your shoulders. And that's what he did. So Kevin Owens will take that style to the bank. And here's the good news. Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn busted their ass, literally, in a match they knew they were losing. I always say, watch for those people, because you can sometimes tell a wrestler's going to lose if it appears they're dogging it. You're like, ah, they're not putting much effort into it. I bet they're going to lose. Oh, they're not pulling out all the stops. I bet you they're going to lose. Ah, if I'm losing, why should I take risks? If I'm losing, why should I bust my ass? Last night, Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens busted their ass. So I respect both of those guys. They're great performers, but my respect level went up even more because these are the type of guys who will bust their ass even though it's going to be in a losing effort. So great match, Mike. I thought this was definitely the most entertaining one of the night.
Absolutely, and that's the thing. I mean, they can bust their ass this way, and they can bust their ass as Sami Zayn did, you know, for a long time with the Bloodline, and Kevin Owens has done for a long time with different things, you know, and that's the thing. And this is, was it Corey Graves or was it Michael Cole that said, this is a Terry Funk type of match. One of
absolutely,
them said,
and of course, KO had Terry Funk on his T-shirt.
Right, and that's the thing. And this is, and also, we'll get to this later, but Seth Rollins paid him some mind too. Paid Terry some funk some mind too. But again, these are two guys, and we know what's gonna happen. At some point, they're gonna break up, and either the authors are paying or the new look, Street Profits, or possibly even the New Day. You know, those three teams as of right now. I wouldn't put the Alpha Academy because they're kind of putting them in the back burner. And we don't know. We have a feeling we know about when the Usos are going to get back together, but we really don't know yet. So it's those other three teams that I mentioned. And there's a possibility that at some point Owens and Zayn might possibly get those titles back at some point.
Yeah, I don't know. It's definitely possible. Todd, this was a fun match from start to finish.
Well, absolutely right. Like you said, that was a fun match with the tag team championship last night. I like the part in there they came out of the penalty box, and one of them, I think Corey Graves or Michael Cole says, "They just came out of the penalty box."
Unfortunately, Michael Cole thought they were dressed as the Pittsburgh Steelers and not the Pittsburgh Penguins, which was pretty funny. Obviously, not a hockey fan, Michael Cole. But using the sticks, and it was a very, very entertaining match. And it was such an old-school booking with Dominic coming out, first J.D. McDonagh, and then Dominic, then Rhea, all the stuff going on. It took the entire Judgment Day plus J.D. McDonagh to defeat them, which makes Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn still look strong in defeat. It did everything right. There was nothing wrong with this match. Nothing at all wrong with this match. This is pretty much a perfect match. It furthered a great storyline. It was well fought by everyone. The timing of everybody was impeccable. Some of the spots were incredible. I had no problem with this match. This was an A-plus match, much like Becky Lynch and Trish Stratus was in the steel cage. Definitely an A-plus match. We then got to this Grayson Waller effect thing, which in my opinion just isn't working. Grayson Waller is like if you ordered The Miz on Wish. That's what it reminds me of. Cody Rhodes comes out, and instead of talking about, I have a big announcement. I thought it was going to be something major with his career. Instead, he announces, I turned in a political favor to get Jey Uso on Raw? What do you mean you turned in a political favor? What the hell are you talking about? Well, I hope we didn't make a mistake. I have no idea what the hell he's even talking about. This was not in any, this did not make sense in any way, shape, or form. I have no idea why Cody Rhodes would make this announcement. It smacks of, oh, I'm the favored son backstage, and I can make booking decisions. This is dumb. This hurts Cody Rhodes' reputation. What's he supposed to be, the fair-haired boy backstage who, oh, you get everything handed to you. You want somebody back? You want somebody on this show? What would you like next, Cody? I don't like it. Now, the fans popped for Jay because they thought he was gone, but I got news for you. He wasn't gone long enough. He was not gone long enough. This would have been a much better announcement coming from someone else after about a month, month and a half. So he said, I hope we know what we're doing. Who's we? Who's we? What, are you a booker now? I just didn't like it. It didn't make any sense to me. And, you know, listen, Grayson Wall is a good worker and everything, but, Mike, the way they're using him, he's just a third-rate Miz.
Yeah, that's right. He's a third-rate Miz. And he may be even a third. I mean, if L.A. Knight had his own thing, he may be even a third-rate L.A. Knight, you know, because
that's true.
L.A., I mean, look, he's decent on the mic, but he's not Miz, and he's not L.A. Knight.
That he is not. So James came back with a pop. I guess after what happened Friday night with Jimmy, which was just weird, and I don't get it. Again, I have a problem with this, though. I'll tell you what the problem is. If your ultimate goal is to get Jay and Jimmy to fight, you've separated them. And if that's, well, we separated them because we're not going to do that till WrestleMania, well, you better hope they still have that momentum that long. Because if you're separating them from that long and then all of a sudden you're like, oh, now we're going to put them back together, fans might have lost interest. You better be careful of that. If we see Jey Uso only on Raw and Jimmy Uso only on SmackDown until a month and a half or so before WrestleMania, and then all of a sudden, oh, let's pick up the storyline again where they're going to fight, it may not have the same momentum it has right now. You better be cautious of that. I don't know if this helps the Bloodline storyline. I tend to think it might hurt it. We'll see. I just think it's an interesting decision. Anyway, we then get to the feature match of the night, which first it was the women's championship. I almost forgot about this. Raquel Rodriguez versus Rhea Ripley. I'm not going to lie. I did not like this match. I did not like this match at all. I think it proved one thing. Raquel Rodriguez is not ready. She has the personality of a cardboard cutout. She seems tentative in the ring at times. Her and Rhea Ripley tried to have some chemistry. I don't think there was much. Fans were not into it because nobody believed she was winning. I don't think the booking in the match was very good. If I booked this match, I would have said from the minute this bell rings, Rhea Ripley is going to try to outpower Raquel Rodriguez and get thrown around like a rag doll, to the point where she's panicking, to the point where she's taking nine counts and just barely sliding back in the ring like she doesn't want to be there. Clearly, so the announcers can say, Rhea Ripley, for the first time, understands what it's like to be manhandled and outpowered like she's done to her opponents for so long. Raquel Rodriguez is in Rhea Ripley's head, and Rhea Ripley's not in a good spot. Then you have Dominic come out and cause the problems. That would have kept Raquel Rodriguez, who, by the way, Corey Graves referred to as Raquel Gonzalez on a couple of occasions. And he also referred to her as the champion, which was weird. No appearance by Liv Morgan, nothing other than Dominic's interference. I see nothing much for Raquel Rodriguez, unfortunately, going forward here, Mike. It was I just think it was a weak effort.
Yeah, it was a weak effort, isn't it? At one point, I thought it looked good because she was selling her power, but you know, it is what it is. And this is another one of these, I don't want to say, you know, the Miz and that match and the other match before, after, right after, and now this match, you know, was a filler match. But basically, that's what we're talking about. We've had three filler matches on this show.
Filler match is a very good way to put it, because that's exactly what it felt like, Mike. You hit the nail on the head with that. And here's the thing. If you're booking the match, I understand she sold Raquel Rodriguez's power to an extent, but not enough. The idea behind it, at least if I was the booker, I would have said, Rhea, you got to go in there like you think you're pretty much equal with her. But right away, it's going to be obvious you're not. And we have to see you panic so that the announcers can say, Rhea Ripley's panicking. She clearly sees she's not, it's not a close contest. Rhea Ripley's very powerful. She is not Raquel Rodriguez powerful, and we're seeing it now. That way you can play her up as at least the strongest person in the Federation, where it's not like, oh, it's almost 50-50. It came out like it's close. It shouldn't be. Give her that at least. Now, Corey Graves was trying by saying it's not all about power. You know, Rhea Ripley's more well-versed than that. Yes, that's exactly what I wanted to get through. Is, my God, we thought she was going to outpower everybody. She's not outpowering Raquel Rodriguez, not even close. And Rhea Ripley realizes it, and she's in a panic. But luckily, she's more well-versed. She's sneaky. She might be a better wrestler. She's a little quicker. She has a better move set. But when push comes to shove, she had to have Dominic come down there to help. That did not happen. For that reason, Todd, I think this was probably the worst match of the night.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Like you said, that was like a botched-fest match. And, you know, like you said about Corey Graves, he fucked up a couple times and saying the champion, Rodriguez is being a champion, calling Raquel Gonzalez. Like, come on. It's Rodriguez, not Gonzalez.
Now, Rhea Ripley did nail her with a drop kick to the face. Literally busted her nose open. Nailed her with a drop kick. So it was a physical match. I just don't think it was a very good one. We now get to the main event, which is Seth Rollins versus Shinsuke Nakamura. I was amazed, and I had to think about it, when they said Shinsuke Nakamura's first main event of a pay-per-view or a premium live event. And I thought, wait a minute. That can't be true. Because when he first came in, they were making a big deal out of him. He even went for championships and everything. But then I said, well, the only one I could think of would have been the Royal Rumble that he won, but that wasn't the main event. The Royal Rumble wasn't even the main event of the Royal Rumble card. So I guess they're right. Shinsuke had never main evented a pay-per-view or a premium live event until last night. That's amazing. I love Shinsuke Nakamura as a heel. Shinsuke Nakamura is infinitely better as a heel. His mannerisms, his facial expressions, his body language, his mood, everything changes when he's a heel, and he becomes this smarmy, insidious heel that you want to see somebody just beat the hell out of. So he is great at his role, great at it. I thought they were great to say Shinsuke Nakamura's finally realized, it's taken him a few years to realize what he needs to do in the WWE as opposed to New Japan, but here he is. Here's my problem. And maybe it's just my problem. This storyline sucks. And I'll tell you why it sucks. Seth Rollins said, I've had this back problem for years. Well, how come we've never seen it then? How come you did every single move you did last night without any complaint or holding your back or anything, and now every single time you do one of these, you're, oh, my back, oh, my back. Well, wait a minute. You just did these moves 3 weeks ago, and it wasn't, oh, your back. We haven't seen any sign of this ever. And now all of a sudden we do. Plenty of people targeted your back. And we never saw this. Oh, he can't do this superplex because of his back, so he has to turn it into something else. How come? What about last week, 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago? You rushed this. There should have been a thing where Seth Rollins took a couple weeks off, and they said, Seth Rollins has a back problem. Forget the stupid I'm whispering, I know about your back thing. Dumb. Dumb. Just say he's taking a few weeks off. He injured his back. Then if Seth Rollins came out and said, yeah, I'm not 100%. My back is bothering me. But I'm going to have to go through with this match. I'm a fighting champion. I'm going through with the match. Then it would have made sense. But to say I've been struggling with this problem for years and my wife worries about me every single time. You've been in Hell in a Cell matches. You've been through tables. You've been powerbombed through tables. Never one time has anybody mentioned your back. Now all of a sudden, all Michael Cole has to say is, you see how he's doing this to avoid his back? You see how Shinsuke's sitting down low to target his back? Come on. The storyline sucks. All of a sudden, everything's about his back. When 2 weeks ago, there was no sign of it at all. And it's supposed to be an ongoing situation for years. How come we've never seen one hint of it? So that destroyed the storyline. And it was lazy because all you had to do is give Seth Rollins a couple weeks off saying he had a flare-up in his back. He has some issues with it. He might be taking some time off. Then have him say, I'm going to come back to do this match. Then it would have made sense. You didn't need Shinsuke Nakamura whispering, I know about your back. What, Shinsuke Nakamura got the access to Seth Rollins' medical records? It just doesn't make sense, and I don't like it. Having said that, it was a very good match. It was not an exciting match because anybody knows that Shinsuke Nakamura is not winning. What I thought, however, was that Damian Priest was going to come down. There was a moment when I said they may end this entire pay-per-view with the Judgment Day owning everything except Roman Reigns' title. There was a part of me that said, since they won that tag team, it just might happen. And I thought, well, Shinsuke will attack him after he loses. Beat the hell out of Rollins. His back will be in such bad shape. And then down will come Damian Priest and give him that crucifix thing. And that'll be it. Didn't happen. They didn't even hint at it. Shinsuke Nakamura did attack Seth Rollins after the pay-per-view or the premium live event went off the air. Just to set up what I guess is going to be a rematch at Fastlane. Which then what I'm saying might happen, I don't know. What I can tell you is this. I would have been much more excited about this match if it made a modicum of sense. But the storyline did not, and for that reason, it kind of left me feeling like it was just average, Mike.
I liked it fine enough for what it was because, you know, I figured like you, as I would have came out of my seat if they would have did what you said. After a hard-fought match, you know, you didn't like how it was set up and all that stuff, but Shinsuke wrestled that match the way you should wrestle a match with a guy with a, even though it may or may not have been a worked injury, an injury like that. He went after the back, you know, kneed him, elbowed him, camel clutch, half crab, all that stuff that, yeah, even something as simple as a suplex or a power slam with a guy with a history of back injuries, that's going to do something to him, right? So
right.
Shinsuke did his job last night. He did his job. So put aside that you don't like how it was set up. Look at it for what it was. Shinsuke did his job. They're going to get another match out of this. These two guys obviously work well together. And we're going to see a another very good match out of this.
I agree with that. I just think my problem is you can't have Seth Rollins selling every move hurts his back when he hasn't done that. How come if you've been living with this for 4 years, we've never seen you one time do that? That doesn't make sense. All of a sudden, it's, oh, everything hurts his back. Wait a minute. Plenty of people targeted your back this past year. I've never seen one sign of it. It's a rushed story that could have been a million times better. But let me tell you how you could have fixed it. Shinsuke Nakamura beats the hell out of Seth Rollins afterwards. Seth Rollins is screaming that his, you know, his back is worse than it's ever been. You know, they're saying, my God, he's really done his back in now. Out comes Damian Priest with the briefcase. Passes Shinsuke Nakamura, who then, before Damian Priest cashes in, gets back in and gives him a Kinshasa, right? And you say, lo, my God, Shinsuke's going to help Damian Priest win. Damian Priest comes in, picks up Seth Rollins in that crucifix, and Shinsuke slides in and gives Damian Priest the kick to the face. Throws Seth Rollins on him for the 1-2-3. He does not win. He loses his Money in the Bank briefcase, and Shinsuke says, nobody takes the title but me. Proving, I'm not a good guy, I'm not a bad guy. I'm a me guy. It's about me now. Then at Fastlane, you have a three-way dance because you have Adam Pearce say, well, that was screwed up, what happened to Damian Priest, so you will get your title shot against Seth Rollins, but so will Shinsuke get his rematch. We have a three-way dance for the titles. Had they done that, I would have been bought and sold on that, Mike.
I would have been bought and sold on that as well, and the fact of the matter is lack of planning. I mean, this is well set up for what you just said. Well set up for it, you know, and I mean, I don't know what it is, but over the past 4, 5, 6 years, the lack of planning in certain things that the WWE, the lack of planning, lack of attention to detail, I don't know.
And you know, Mike, you could have done this even better than that by just saying, look, here's the proof that they didn't know what they were going to do. If I knew this is the storyline going into Payback, I would have said a couple of weeks before Payback, we got to have Seth Rollins start favoring his back. And then we could have the news. Well, a lot of people didn't know this, but Seth Rollins has been dealing with a back injury pretty much since he won the title. A little bit before that, but he's toughed it out. But it seems to be getting worse. And initially, Seth Rollins had requested some time off, but now that he's the champion, he's going to tough it out. Then I would have said, well, now it makes sense because it's getting worse. He didn't take the time off. He's wrestling more matches. It's getting progressively worse. That's what would happen if you didn't tend to it. That would have made much more sense. Then if you did exactly what you did last night and then did exactly what I said, okay, Damian Priest doesn't have the Money in the Bank briefcase. He still has a tag team championship. It still got gold. Shinsuke Nakamura is now a lone wolf where you say the bad guys hate him, the good guys hate him. Shinsuke's out for himself, and he's a very dangerous guy because he don't give a damn who you are. He'll turn on you in a heartbeat. He's like a snake. He'll bite anybody. That would have been a great triple threat match. What a great triple threat match. You would have had it Fastlane. It's a shame they couldn't really, figure that out, but I just think the back thing was rushed, Todd, and for that reason I never bought that it was real.
You're absolutely right there. Like you said, that would be brilliant to have like a triple threat match for the heavyweight championship, for the Monday Night Raw championship, you know. You have Rollins as the champion. You have Shinsuke Nakamura want a rematch, and you want Damian Priest to cash in his Money in the Bank briefcase. That'd be something we could see there.
Yeah, and I'm not saying Seth Rollins doesn't really have back problems. Maybe he does. What I'm saying is he's shown no signs that that's a weakness. So we're not buying into. All of a sudden, Shinsuke announces he has back problems, and now all of a sudden, everything hurts his back. It's almost like psychosomatic. You know, you tell somebody, how you feeling? Great. Oh, you look tired. Yeah, oh, my head aches. And, oh, well, that's psychosomatic. You've suggested that they don't look good, and now they don't feel good. So that's a problem. You should have planned this out. The reason they didn't plan this out, Mike, is because they didn't write it ahead of time. It was rushed.
And then remember when he brought in – he talked about his wife.
Yep.
And he goes, your wife, you're going to do something with your wife and stuff. wife and kids. Well, basically an invitation in my mind to have Becky Lynch chime in and do a promo or do something in the back or have her just talking to Seth Rollins and saying, well, they mentioned me and I kind of agree with them or something to that effect. What are you doing? You've been asking for time off. Why haven't you taken it or something to that effect? I mean, they missed.
Yeah,
both.
Plus, Mike, you got to understand, he was doing moves that would have hurt his back. Oh, my back's hurt so bad I'm doing suicide dives to the outside of the ring. Okay. Well, I'm sorry. If your back hurts that bad, I don't think you'd be doing it. Like Derek said, you know, the moves he was doing, why wouldn't it have hurt his back before? You're right. If you want to get a really dramatic angle, you have it revealed a few weeks before Shinsuke ever turns on Seth Rollins, that Seth Rollins is dealing with a back issue. Seth Rollins is saying, very minor, it's not causing me much trouble, I'm not going to take any time off, I'm just toughing myself out through it, I'll be just fine. Believe me, it's not impairing me in any way. Then backstage, you could have Becky Lynch say, look, you can lie to them. You can lie to the fans, you can lie to your opponents, I get it, you're not lying to me. I know that you're in pain. I want you to take time off. The championship is not more important than your health. The championship is not more important than you having a future where you can hold your child. So I'm asking you to take some time off before this gets worse. Then have a match where something happens that Seth Rollins, whether he wins or loses, it looks like, oh, my God, that really exacerbated the problem. Then Shinsuke Nakamura comes along, turns on him, and says, with your back the way it is, that's an easy target for me. And when Shinsuke still can't pull it out, gets so upset he beats the hell out of Rollins, Damian Priest comes down to cash in, and Shinsuke says, yeah, I don't think so, making it look as though he's going to help Damian Priest win it, but then turns out, no, no. And then all Shinsuke has to say is, nobody gets the belt before me. Would have made such an interesting character, because you would have said, he don't care who he attacks. He's not necessarily a bad guy or a good guy. He's just about himself. And if you then had Adam Pearce say, well, Seth Rollins wants the rematch after what happened, and I agree there should be a rematch. So Seth as champion has the right to ask for a rematch. He's getting it. But Damian Priest has a point. He was screwed out of this Money in the Bank briefcase. So we're going to write that. And he's going to be involved in this match, too. He has an equal chance of winning this championship at Fastlane. That's a great main event. That's a great main event. And then you got the drama of Becky Lynch saying you had to do it. You had to get yourself in a situation where now it's going to be 2-on-1 and you've got an injured back. Do you honestly think this is what's best for you? Or worse, do you honestly think that's what's best for us? Would have been a lot of drama there. A lot of drama. You could have rode that. Mike is absolutely correct. If you threw Becky Lynch into that angle and you wanted to show a different side of them, this is the time. Fortunately, Mike, they don't have that foresight.
They don't have that foresight. That's the thing. And look, that three-man match could have been written in such a way, and you could have had Seth Rollins tell Becky Lynch, but Becky, I got a plan. I got a plan, and the plan is you let these other two guys beat the hell out of themselves. Yeah, you take some bumps here and there in that three-way match. You let them guys beat the hell out of themselves, and you take the opportunity. You're the ultimate opportunist, after all. You take the opportunity to beat the man who's the worst off, and there you go. You keep your title.
Well, you know, again, if I'm booking it, which I'm not, but if I was booking it, I would have Finn Balor before Fastlane, you know, maybe next week or the week after, say, shouldn't we be concentrating on the tag team titles? Aren't we the tag team champions? And have Damian Priest say, yeah, we're the tag team champions, but at the same token, I'm Mr. Money in the Bank, and I lost it, and I got an opportunity to be the champion, and I'm taking it. of having Finn Balor say, you know, we're not going to hold these belts if you're off doing something else. What happens if you get hurt? Well, you're in there with two people. Then you're not paying attention to the team. You're not being the team player. Then at the end of the day, this is where you have Judgment Day break up. You have D. McDonough, who's now a member of the Judgment Day, come down like he's going to help Damian Priest and instead screw him over. Shinsuke gets kicked out of the ring. He gets curb stomped by Seth Rollins, 1, 2, 3, and that's it. There's where the big breakup is. Seth Rollins still your champion. Shinsuke was not defeated. Damian Priest was screwed by Judgment Day. Finn Balor could say, you wanted to pay more attention to, you're greedy. You wanted the solo title when we had the tag team champions. It wasn't good enough for you. I thought you said we had to be team players, but you're not a team player. So you're out of the team. JD's in, you're out. Then you turn Damian Priest's face. That's it. And then you have JD McDonagh, you have Finn Balor, you have Rhea Ripley and Dominic all say Damian Priest was always the problem. He's hot-headed, he's selfish, he was this, that, he proved it. He got his gold and it wasn't good enough. There's so many things you could have done with that, Mike.
Yeah, and here's something else you could have done with it. You know, you have them being, you have him being screwed out of his briefcase, right? Then them kicking him out of the group, then that's when you bring back Bad Bunny and you have Bad Bunny say to him, well, I always knew you weren't, you know, you shouldn't have been with him anyway. You're not that type of guy, you know, and we're best friends. And I know I didn't want to mess with you because, you know, you thought you knew better, but obviously not. So, you know, you could have brought Bad Bunny into this thing as well, you know, being that bad.
Well, the easy way to do that is to have Finn Balor say, we're not tag team champions anymore, or have Damian Priest say, I'm relinquishing my half of the tag team championship. And I guess if you can do it with Piper Niven, you can do it with J.D. McDonagh. Just have J.D. McDonagh say, okay, I'm the new tag team champion. Damian Priest is out for a little while. So it's me. We're the new tag team champions. Then when Damian Priest comes back as a face, they could say, well, the trouble with you is, yeah, you could go for the tag team championships if you want, but you ain't got nobody else tag team with you. You burned all your bridges. Nobody in this locker room trusts you. Nobody in this locker room likes you. And the only family you had kicked you to the curb. Who you got? That's when you bring Bad Bunny back for a pay-per-view match. And he say, well, I do have a friend who was a friend of mine even when I did him wrong and continues to be a friend of mine. And he's about the same size as Finn Balor and J.D. McDonagh, so it's not that bad. I would have been all for that. And you would have got another great pay-per-view match out of it. There's so many branches on the tree. You're not using them. You're not using them. It's unfortunate, really. I mean, at the end of the day, this pay-per-view had two A-plus matches and one strong B-plus match. It missed a few branches on the trees, and it had some very, exactly what Mike said, filler matches to it that felt exactly like that, felt like filler. So it's not a perfect pay-per-view, but it wasn't a terrible pay-per-view. It was enjoyable in spots. It was very enjoyable. In spots, it was boring. It just depended. It was inconsistent. That's a good way to put it. I was expecting more storyline. I was expecting more fleshing out of other storylines. I didn't get it. I did get some solid matches. I'm going to give this thing a B minus. If what had happened in that last match was what we just said, I would have given it an A minus. Because that would have been such a damn good storyline, I would have said, whoa, boy, are we looking down the barrel of something good now. Triple threat match, and Damian Priest maybe on the verge of out of the Judgment Day, because Finn Balor's going to be mad that he's concentrating on a solo and not his tag team titles. And there's going to be so much going on here. Becky Lynch is telling Seth Rollins that he needs to stop, and Shinsuke Nakamura is basically saying, I don't care who I have to go through. to win the title. That's my ultimate goal here in WWE, and I'm going to get it. I'm all for that. So I would have probably given it an A-. As it stands, I can't give it any more than a B-, though, Mike. What's your thoughts?
I can't give it any more than a B- as well. Furthermore, the thing with Shinsuke, you could absolutely have had. I know they're on SmackDown now, but you could absolutely have had AJ and the Good Brothers come over and say something to Shinsuke. You know.
Well, you also remember Finn Balor was, you know, also. So I mean, if he screws over Damian Priest. There always could be that little, I wonder if Finn Balor had anything to do with that situation. There's always those branches on the tree. If you're climbing the tree and you see two branches, and then you go out on the one branch, but there's seven more branches, that's good. Because then we don't know where things are going. The WWE always sticks to left branch or right branch. Climb the tree a little more, left branch or right branch. Why can't we have several branches? Some of them we just imagine as fans. I wonder if Shinsuke and Finn, conjured that plan. After all, they do have some things in common. You don't necessarily show it on TV, but it's something you ponder. I like those type of things. It makes you think as a fan. We don't have this. I mean, you could even have Damian Priest mention it and say, if I find out that you had anything to do with that Shinsuke thing, because I know you guys share something in common here. Finn Balor says, what are you, crazy? You paranoid? The problem with you is you're greedy. We won the tag team championships. You don't care. You're off chasing your own glory. That's not what Judgment Day was supposed to be about. It's not about chasing your own glory. You're the one who's not a team player. There's a lot of stuff to flesh out there. In the meantime, you got Seth Rollins and Becky Lynch, with Becky Lynch saying, why did you have to do this? Your back is worse than it's ever been. And you're going to go into a match where two guys are going to target it. Not one, two. Two very, very, very hard opponents. This is dumb. Then, if I had to throw money at him, I would get the great Muta to manage Shinsuke Nakamura. And have Shinsuke Nakamura just say, doesn't matter who you are, I have no friends. I have Great Muta as an advisor, and his advice to me is win at all costs. I don't need friends. I want gold. Man, that's great, right? You're like, whoa, if Shinsuke Nakamura's thing is, I've embarrassed my legacy doing the things I've done in WWE, and I'll be damned if I rest until that gold's around my waist, I'd be like, whoa. They may give it to him. He's got a point. I'd also say, well, hell, maybe they'll give it to Damian Priest and break away from the Judgment Day so we can go one-on-one with some of these people. Or maybe Seth Rollins will persevere. There's so many branches on that tree, Mike, if they had just done it the right way.
Yeah, if they just done it the right way. But again, this is the WWE, and they choose the wrong way over and over and over again. And that's, I don't think that's going to change. At least not until maybe Vince is in the grave, maybe. But,
see, I don't even know if they choose the wrong way so much as they choose the lazy way. You say, okay, we're going to do this. But why not think and say, well, as long as we're going to do this, can we do this, this, and this to set up more branches? They don't do that. They're just like, just do this. Okay, well, that's great. It's always a one-dimensional story, several different dimensions. Now, I know they're capable of it because the Bloodline story, when it was in its prime, was a several-dimension story. There were all kinds of branches on the tree. Who's Solo going to side with? Is Jimmy on board? Is Jay on board? Is Roman really as bad as he looks? Is Jimmy going to snap? Is Jay going to snap? Is Paul double-crossing them all? How about Sami Zayn? Is he really just trying to break up the Bloodline, or is he really honestly into them? There were so many different branches on that tree. That's what made it great. When there's just one branch, or possibly two, then you say they're either going to do one of two things, just like I did yesterday with my predictions. I said one of two things is going to happen. Either they're going to want J.D. McDonough to join Judgment Day, in which case Judgment Day will win the title. And J.D. McDonough will be a very big part of having them win the title. Or they're going to break up the Judgment Day. And J.D. McDonough is going to cost them the titles. And that's going to be the breakup. That's just the two branches on the tree. When there are six branches on the tree and you just say, well, I'm not sure what direction they're going to go in. There's a zillion directions they could go. That was the Bloodline storyline where you're like, I just don't know. There's a lot of things could happen. That's when it becomes fun, Todd, because you're just caught in that I don't know what's going to happen next routine.
Oh, you're absolutely right there. Like you said, that there's a lot of branches on that tree with the Judgment Day. There's a lot of branches on the tree for the Bloodline, for both factions in the WWE. You never know what's going to happen with what.
So they
two.
Didn't take the branches for the Bloodline. They only took the branches for the, I mean, for the Judgment Day, they only took the branches for the Bloodline. And that is a problem. Mike, they really need to correct this because it gets extraordinarily predictable. Basically speaking, we predicted every match.
Absolutely. And that's the thing. They need to be more unpredictable. I mean, look, back in the Attitude Era, they were unpredictable as hell. Even later on in the Ruthless Aggression Era, they were more unpredictable than they are. You know, and that's the thing. I mean, if they weren't unpredictable back in the Attitude Era, we wouldn't have gotten Stone Cold Steve Austin. If we weren't unpredictable in the Ruthless Aggression Era, we wouldn't have gotten, John Cena, you know. That's the thing. And here's the deal.
I do want to mention one thing and get everybody's take on it. I think the line of the night, and there were several good lines last night, but the one line that stuck with me that I thought was a really good line is when Tiffany Stratton appeared backstage and told Becky Lynch she wanted to apologize for calling her a former NXT champion because she didn't realize she never was an NXT champion. I thought that was a great line. And then the best line, of course, was Becky Lynch telling her to go crawl back into the Mattel box. That was actually a really good line, Mike.
That is a great line. And look, I guess people don't like her down in NXT. I don't know. I really don't follow NXT a lot, but apparently they don't like her. But and if they don't and she's not getting along in NXT, then there's a chance that they may very well bring her up or whatever. Maybe too soon, maybe not, I don't know, but because their people don't like her down there or whatever. But, yeah, she's good. Tiffany Stratton is good. And, hell, I wouldn't be at all opposed to them making something of that little thing backstage between Tiffany Stratton and –
I think they're going to, Mike. I think they're going to. And Tiffany Stratton was great when she was like, okay, bye. But very funny. She does her job very well. Anyway, folks, thanks for listening.
Hey, this is for my friends Marcus, Mike, and Todd. Thank you for voting me as the most impressive debut at Raw of this decade. Thank you. I send you a big hug. And for all those, listen to WrestleChat Radio from your friend Angel Garza. And remember, El Latino está en la casa, baby.
You're listening to Wrestling Chat Radio.